The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following program is sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life and is responsible for its content.
Welcome to From the Median, a daily report from the front line of the pro-life movement, discussing two worldviews that are driving our culture in opposite directions. From the Median asks, which side of the road are you on? What direction do you want our culture to go? Tune in as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life. And now your host, Molly Smith.
Good evening and welcome to From the Median, where we are concerned with the middle ground, not just to understand both sides of an argument, but also to awaken the consciences of those who are neutral or indifferent to this, the greatest civil rights movement of all times, the pro-life movement. Listeners, as always, so wonderful to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining. I have a brand new guest for From the Median radio program, but certainly not a brand new person that I know joining me right now. We're going to have a great discussion. Janine Jones is the brand new president of Cleveland Right to Life. As many of you know, on March the 31st, I stepped down as president of Cleveland Right to Life and went into supposed retirement, but I'm still very active. I'm hoping to stay active, but the fun thing about what I'm doing right now is I don't have the responsibility. I just am there to pass my opinion, and sometimes they don't even want to hear it. Anyway, Janine has been a longtime friend, probably known Janine for nearly two decades now. She's been a thick in the fight of protecting all human life, and particularly here in Cleveland with us. I'm going to introduce you to Janine Jones, president of Cleveland Right to Life, and we're going to talk about who's Janine Jones, what she's doing, what are the plans for the future. Janine, thank you so much for joining and taking the time to be with us today.
Well, thank you, Molly. Thank you for having me, and thank you for all of the help and assistance you've given me over the years. So, very happy to be here, still working with you.
Yeah, well, we are still working together. We actually were together yesterday afternoon, and we were laughing because, you know, supposedly I've retired, but I am having lots of fun, but you're doing all the work. So, so that's great. Janine, who is Janine Jones? Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Okay, well, I'm almost a native Clevelander. I was born in Indianapolis, but moved here when we were four. And so I lived most of my life in Cleveland on the west side. I went to Lake Ridge Academy for high school and, had a detour at the very end and wound up graduating from a school in England, a boarding school in England, which was, I have to say, a lot of fun. And my father was transferred, and so we did that and came back. And I went to Miami University of Ohio, graduated from there with a BS in economics, and then came back to Cleveland, worked, and was getting my MBA in accounting. And so I've been in the business realm for most of my career. Worked for big companies, GE, ICI Paints, which used to be Glidden Paints, OM Group, a chemical company here on the west side, and then finished up with BASF out in Beechwood, Master Builders. And so done a variety of things in those roles, so a little bit of a jack of all trades, master of none. And one of the detours in life took me to New York. I worked for GE there, and then left after about 4 years and lived in Connecticut for about a year and a half and worked for a small design engineering company, and came back to Cleveland after that and thought, you know what, I want to do something to give back. I wanted to get involved, and I had a couple of friends through the years who I knew had abortions, and one was especially poignant. We went out to, I was living in New York, we went out to dinner one evening, she and I, and it was Mother's Day. It happened to be Mother's Day. And she said, you know, Janine, this is a really difficult day for me, always. She said, you may not know this, but she said, I've had three abortions.
Oh, wow.
And so at that point in time, she was 50 years old. And, you know, both of us knew she was never going to have kids. And she really regretted her abortions. And so that just moved my heart, and, you know, have had other friends and acquaintances who I know have gone through the same trauma. So moved back to Cleveland and picked up the phone one day and called Cleveland Right to Life. And this lovely lady with a British accent answered the phone. And so that kind of became the beginning of things for me with the pro-life movement, which that was about, coming up on, 18 years or
nearly 20 years ago, Absolutely.
And
when I heard your voice and all the things that you could do, I said, you know what? I think we've got a place for you. And immediately you came and you started to do research for us. And then within a very short time, we asked you to join the board. So you've been a board member for probably most of those 18 years. You know, you've worked with us and done incredible things. And Janine, our journey has taken us on all kinds of down different lanes and different avenues. And through it all, you know, you and I have been beside each other walking through, and our dear, dear friend, Marty Kopmeyer, who is our treasurer, you know, has been, so it's been the three musketeers for most of the time. It's been a wonderful, wonderful journey. I mean, I think you, just as I do, wish that we weren't doing it anymore, that we had solved this issue. But you know, Janine, I don't know. I mean, you're a very strong Christian woman, and you are very biblical in your outlook on life. And I don't think we're ever going to come to the end of this until God comes back and calls us. Because I think if you look through the biblical times, how many times the child is the one that gets, you know, the wrong end of the sacrificed for evil. And, you know, that's what we're dealing with, the sacrifice for evil. It's unbelievable.
Exactly. No, exactly. I think you're right. I mean, evil never sleeps, and this has been going on for millennia. And so, regardless of what happened with Roe, this fight is going to keep going on. So we just have to, you know, hitch up our pants, buckle them tight, and get ready to go, because they are not going to stop. I mean, we've seen what's happened over the past year and a half with these various different states that they've come into, and they've just kind of ramrodded abortion through into the various state constitutions, and now they've got Florida teed up to do the same thing. So we have to just get, and you've said this several times over the past few months after that disappointing vote in November, we have to do things differently. There's something we're not doing. And, you know, I'll be honest, one of the main things that I think that we are not doing is we are not encouraging and pressing our clerical leaders to lead, to lead boldly from the pulpit. And so some of the things that I really want to focus on this year are related to that. You know, church outreach. How do we interact with these shepherds of, you know, their flocks who, for one reason or another, are not preaching boldly from the pulpit? Maybe it's because they just don't have the necessary information. So that's something we can help with. We're all about education. We have all different kinds of resources that we can give to them. We can even write sermons for them, and, you know, make it as simple as possible for them to do their job boldly. And so that's one possible reason why it's not happening. I suspect another possible reason is because there may be fear that, you know, you speak too boldly. A lot of these pastors look at this as a political issue, and they're scared off when it comes to the possibility of losing their 501c3. And so there's a book that I read recently. One of my dear friends gave it to me, and I've shared it with you, Molly. I know you're working your way through it, but it's a book by Eric Metaxas. It's called Letter to the American Church. And in that book, it's so interesting because, and of course, he wrote Bonhoeffer, so he's done the whole biography of what that brave man went through before the war and during the war. But what he's saying is that, you know, we're kind of in that state. The American church is in the state that the German church was in 1932. And they were not necessarily asleep. They knew what was happening around them, but they were cowed into not talking. And I didn't realize this, but the dynamic in Germany was that really the German state controlled the Lutheran church. There was no separation of church and state because the state had a hand in what was being done and said. And
still does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we always have that canard thrown out there about mm-hmm. separation of church and state. Well, the whole point of that was to keep the state out of the church's business, not the church out of the
Absolutely.
State.
Absolutely.
We have a right, we have an obligation, we have a duty to influence what's happening in this culture. And if it's not happening, we're partly to blame. It's not just the pastors and priests. We're to blame because we're not pressing them and we're not encouraging them and we're not remonstrating them when it's necessary. So that's going to be a big focus for me this year, is working on interacting more with these pastoral leaders, helping them, trying to understand why some of this stuff isn't happening, and then trying to get them to do the right thing. Some of the other things that we're going to be working on are developing several different committees. One is a legislative committee. We need to be more up to date on what's happening in Columbus, and also have more of an avenue for us to be able to influence those politicians so that they are writing good legislation for us. Mm-hmm. I think it's rare that you get legislation that just sort of springs up from legislators. The good legislation is the legislation that comes with input from the grassroots.
That's right.
And so we want to have much more interplay with those folks down there. Another thing that's incredibly important, and not that we haven't done it through the years, we always have, but development of a broader prayer committee. And we are looking for folks to help us with that. So if anybody has an interest in becoming part of a prayer chain to maybe deal with different levels of need, kind of the daily needs, but then also, some of those things that are more, maybe confidential in nature, where you need a smaller core group of people to help focus on those for you through prayer. And then finally, we'll be working on broadening our volunteer committees as well. So we always have people, who, especially after our convention, who raise their hand and say, yeah, I'd be interested in volunteering. So we want to try to pull those folks in and probably have a social media subcommittee. And so that'll be another emphasis for us for this year. So, we've got a lot of things teed up, and we've got a lot of enthusiastic people who are more than happy to help. And so we're going to be tapping a lot of those folks as we move forward.
Absolutely. Janine, it's interesting because when after the convention, after the November vote, which we lost, and we have now in our constitution the right to abortion right up to the moment of birth, and folks, don't let anybody tell you any other thing. You are able, and I don't want to advertise that, but that's the reality of what we're dealing with, which is why what Janine's talking about now with regards to the focus that we will be taking, that Cleveland Right Life will be taking, is so important, because we are going to have to push back really hard against that. But as you look at that, I was actually quite surprised at the vigor and enthusiasm at our convention this year. I had really anticipated that it was going to be a very somber event, that we would not get a very good turnout because people were just so devastated by the result of the vote. And I don't know about you, but oh my goodness, there appears to be, and we'll have to wait and see whether it actually materializes, but appears to be a huge sort of groundswell movement moving up. People recognize that we're on the cusp of something. Something very, very evil is about to happen, and people are being called. And I can't put my finger on it, but I can feel it. I can just feel it. Do you have the same feeling?
I do. I have that same feeling. And, just to say several things about what you just said. One is, I think that people really are hungry for a vision. They're hungry, especially after the attitude after that vote was devastation, and people were down. And if anything good came out of that whole effort, it was the fact that we did build our network. We grew our network, but we built deeper relationships with the people in it. And so that was one very good thing that came out of that. But, these people were all rightly, they were devastated. Mm-hmm. And so we saw kind of an immediate drop off in engagement in different areas after that. And so I was a little apprehensive too going into the convention, but you know, I think that people showed up and Molly, we raised more money at that convention than we ever have.
Yeah.
I think people had, they needed a breather and now they're back in the fight.
Yeah.
And so, I was very, very heartened to see that kind of outturn that we had and just the level of engagement, and people are, they're ready to go, but they need a leader. They need people to be bold and to tell them, hey, look, here's what's up and here's what we need to do.
That's right.
Now, here are the tools that we can give you to help with that. Let's go do it.
Which feeds right into what you said about, you know, getting to the pulpit, because though, you know, the pastors are our shepherds. They are, you know, sort of tasked by God to be our leaders. Somehow we have to try and wake that whole thing. And you know what, Janine, it's not, you know, the pro-life movement is such a broad spectrum movement. It's not only, and of course it's the most devastating, but it's not only fighting to stop abortion. It's fighting to respect the human dignity of every single person that is made by God. And people, I think Cleveland Right to Life, which is one of the things I'm very grateful to Cleveland Right to Life, because one of the things that Cleveland Right to Life has brought to the table is this whole idea of the dignity of human life. You know, natural law principles. That's the bottom line of our mission statement, is that we stand for natural law principles, and the natural law principles are the full spectrum. So when we're talking, you know, the devastation that's happening to our young people through this whole transgender movement, Cleveland Right to Life's right there in the thick of it. You know, when we saw the devastation that happened through, you know, the imposition of forced vaccines, supposed, you know, Cleveland Right to Life was right in the thick of it, because we could see all the dangers that were taking place. We were able to tie all the pieces together. Do you see that this is going to get, how are we going to make this a real strong vision for people to understand that Cleveland Right to Life is a full spectrum organization?
It's funny. I had a meeting this last week with an organization, and we were talking about the transgender topic, and they said, "Oh, we didn't realize that Cleveland Right to Life was interested in that."
Wow.
Well, you haven't been to our convention, but. Yeah. But we are, and so that just says to me that we need to do a better job, I guess, of communication to people outside of the choir. You know, one of the things that, you know, we've said all through the years is the part of the reason for the convention is to teach the choir to sing, giving them the tools, the education, so that they can go out and spread the word. So maybe that's something that we take on for this year as an action. You know, we use the acronym PAVE to also help with kind of the structuring and the format of the speakers that we bring in and the focus. So prayer, action, voting, education. So I think this year we're probably going to need to put much more emphasis on the action piece of things so that we can get people out, and everybody, you know, no one's a monolith. You know, people have interest in various different areas within this whole spectrum of life. And so, you know, giving people who have, you know, a person, a loved one, maybe who's towards the end of life and needs guidance there. One of the things that we do when we interview these politicians as we're issuing endorsements for Right to Life Action Coalition is, it's one question we've had on there for years, and I would say half of the politicians miss it, and it has to do with end-of-life care and, you know, which is most appropriate. There's something called MOLST, Medical Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment, and then there's the Healthcare Power of Attorney, and then there's the DNR type. And so those are like three choices we give them. The correct answer is, you know, when you're looking for assistance with end-of-life care, healthcare power of attorney is the way that you want to go. Mm-hmm. But most of our folks select MOLST. And so one of the things I'd like to do at the convention this next year, give a somewhat technical presentation on how do you navigate these waters when you're dealing with that. And most of us eventually will deal with that with a loved one. And so how do you make the right decisions? And I know you've been through this. You've been an advocate for someone who, yeah. you know, recently passed away, and someone who really didn't have a great advocate for them to navigate those waters. And I know that you were a real blessing to that family as they had to deal with that. So, the fight never ends in any of these areas. Yeah. But I do, kind of back to one of your previous questions or comments, I think that there is starting to be an awakening.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't call it a great awakening. I don't think we're there yet. But I'm seeing people in areas that, you know, like I would not normally be interacting in, who are coming to the same conclusions that I'm coming to.
That's right.
And it's just kind of amazing to see all of these various different people waking up to different things. And like I bought a t-shirt up recently, it says question everything. And I feel like that's what you have to do now.
Yeah.
You just have to question everything, because we're being lied to in so many different ways, from our government, from, you know, the news. So you have to.
And even from our churches in some instances.
And even from our churches.
Yeah,
and even if it's a lie of omission.
Yeah, exactly. Our schooling, certainly our education system. You know, you're absolutely right. The lies are just everywhere. And so I agree. I have to get one for myself too. Question everything. But my kids would laugh at me because I do anyway.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think, you know, that's so true. And, you know, the fact that we've been shut down and we've been told not to ask any questions, just accept it. I am the science is settled. That is the silliest thing I've ever heard. The science is settled. I mean, when those signs started to pop up on everybody's lawns maybe about 2 years ago, the science is settled. It's like, good grief. What are you? That's embarrassing that you would put that on your front lawn.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's some of the things we've got to sort of point out and bring some of the humor back into the discussions, because I think that always helps a lot. That is one of the things that I will say that the British are able to do. Sometimes way too much, because it's like, not everything is a joke, folks, you know. but the encouraging the discussion, I think, is another huge piece of what we've got to get back to. What do they call them? Doxing people because I asked you a question. Good grief, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things.
What I think is happening, it's happening. It's coming harder and harder. We see it every day. But it's the Christian persecution. And so I think it's really important that people start thinking about that now. You know, how will I react if this happens or that happens?
Yep.
Because it's going to happen. They are coming for Christians, and we've seen it happen with the Catholics, especially the Catholics who celebrate the Latin Mass. We're seeing it all over. I just read an article about a woman in, I think, Finland, who is has been going through trial after trial because she posted a tweet about homosexuality.
Yep.
Quoted it from the Bible. And so she's facing jail.
Yeah.
You know, supposedly in a country that has freedom of speech, freedom of religion. So that we supposedly have that too, but we're seeing those things taken away from us all the time. You know,
absolutely.
We're seeing, you know, Paul Vaughan, Mark Houck, you know, these good men of God who are praying in front of abortion clinics being threatened with 11 years in prison. And grandmothers. And so I think it's really important for people to start to prepare themselves mentally, because if you don't do that, when these things happen, then you're shocked and you haven't thought through your response, or you haven't given it up to God and asked him to give you strength when these things happen.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the other wonderful thing. And then we're out of time, but you know, starting a prayer committee to pray, just seep ourselves in God's word and beg him to help us as we get through this. Janine Jones, president of Cleveland Right to Life, my honor to work beside you for all of these years, and I look forward to helping but not doing too much work. This is going to be wonderful.
Okay, we'll try to keep it that way.
God bless you lots, Janine. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Molly. Bye.
Bye. Don't go anywhere. I will be back with you right after this very short break with another world-class, inspiring guest.
Three. three-star general, Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.